What happened to all the musical legends that transformed our lives in the 60s, 70s, and 80s? Today, hackers illegally download music. Online music stores popularize cheap digital singles. And radio stations promote manufactured singers that menace the airwaves with auto-tuned music. The Rockstar Chronicles conveys the wisdom and truth of a generation of rock gods that shaped our modern musical culture. It features intimate conversations with over 45 rock stars that any baby boomer will instantly recognize. The Rockstar Chronicles will transport you back to a time before advertisers ruled the airwaves. A time when the music mattered.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Well, once again, everyone, I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. And by the Rockstar Chronicles, my new book. It features over 45 intimate conversations with the greatest music legends the world will ever know. It's available now at bookbaby.com and amazon.com. You'll love it. Very few legendary rock groups boasting a string of seminal 1970s hits contain three original members in their ranks more than four decades later. Even fewer have a brand new album out that vividly captures the sound and power of their best-known classics. Well, Firefall has both. That's reason for serious celebration from their legion of loyal fans, and I'm one of them. Firefall hasn't made a new record for a long, long time, since the 90s, says Jock Bartley, the band's founding lead guitarist and vocalist, with three of us original guys in the band. Myself, Mark Andes on bass, and David Muse on saxophone, flute, and keyboards. We've been touring, and it just felt to me, as leader of the band, it's time. We need to start looking at material, writing material, to put a new album out. Comet was released in December 11th on Sunset Boulevard Records. Is that long-awaited release? Their lineup, completed by drummer Sandy Fica and singer-guitarist Gary Jones, Firefall set out to make an album on the same lofty artistic par as their 70s classics for Atlantic Records. The band had overcome a few obstacles along the way. The problem was that the five members of the band live in five different states, says Jock, who produced the disc along with the band and a handful of collaborators. Conquering those logistical roadblocks was worth all the effort. Firefall cut its 1976 Atlantic debut album at Criteria Studios in Miami. It included You Are the Woman. Rick was thinking in his head, I need to write a really happy, positive pop song that'll be in the top 10. And he wrote You Are the Woman, says Jock. Some of us in the band didn't really like it because it was really different. It wasn't like Mexico or Livin' Ain't Livin' or Cinderella or any of that strummy, fast, ballsy stuff that Firefall was becoming. But boy, most everybody, including the producer and then Atlantic Records, they heard that song and they went, that's what we want. You're the Woman crashed the top 10 in the 1977s. Just Remember I Love You and Strange Way, the next year, cemented their stardom. Boulder, Colorado became this hotbed for music, and Firefall was kind of the shining light out of that, says Jock. A lot of people have called Firefall the Colorado sound. New Comet is poised to rocket into the cosmos, the last chapter in Firefall's amazing saga. And today, we please welcome American singer, songwriter, composer, producer, multi-instrumentalist with legendary classic rock artist Firefall, David Muse. Hello, David.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm a big Firefall fan from way back, from the beginning.
Oh, well, we thank you for that. I thank you for that, for keeping me working over the years.
I saw you guys not that long ago. I think it was maybe 2 years ago, a year and a half by now. You were at Ruth Eckerd, and you played with Pablo Cruz and the Little River Band. And, David, I got to tell you, man, I witnessed Jethro Tull and Ian Anderson maybe 6-7 times in my lifetime, but your flute solo was super magnificent. It was the best flute solo I've ever heard in my life.
Well, hey, I appreciate that. You know, it's flute is one of my favorite instruments. I play a lot of different instruments, but woodwinds were my first love. And so, you know, I mean, I try to do what I do, and I got a lot of hot air in me.
Is that what it takes? and you got enough to play the saxophone too, right?
Well, yeah, you know, that's the whole thing. You know, I mean, actually, when I started out in early bands, I didn't really play as much in bands. Of course, there wasn't much call for it at that point in time. Of course, that's going back quite a few years. You know,
that's true. But we're lucky. We have a lot of great musicians that did come from Tampa and the Clearwater area over the years. And, you know, the Outlaws is one of them. You and so many others, you know.
Yeah. We have Rodney Gesto from Atlanta Rhythm Section, right. You know. So, you know, he lives in Tampa, too. And it's kind of funny. Rodney and I have we go back a long ways. Way back in the day, there was a thing in Clearwater here called the Star Spectacular, where they'd have concerts, you mm-hmm. know, and they'd bring in a guy named AJ Perry, and Tampa would bring in one national act and have like three or four little, you know, local bands play, and that's where I got my first big taste of the big stage. We opened up for Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels, and Rodney had a band back then, and they were very popular, and then, of course, he went on to, you know, the Rhythm Section, you know, singer. So,
yeah, we were just talking before the call about Joe Lala. You know, Joe always wanted to be considered an official member of Firefall. He loved the band.
Mm-hmm. Well, he did, and you know, I mean, that's a weird story. He played with us on, you know, pretty much all those first CDs and whenever we could get a hold of him, but. You know, at that particular time, he was, he was like the number one session player in L.A. when it came to percussion. So he was a very busy young man. And like you say, you visit his apartment. Mm-hmm. I visit his apartment over there, too. And if you know, when you first come in the door, you know, the whole wall yep. is lined with gold and platinum albums. And I knew Joe had played on a lot of things, but I remember being there one day and going, damn, Joe, you know, how many records did you play on? Yeah.
Yeah, he was on the Saturday Night Fever album. You know, he did a lot of session work on that, too. Yeah.
Yeah, and ended up being an actor and doing TV yep. shows. I mean, he was a very, you know, very accomplished and talent and funny guy and just a nice guy all around, you know.
Yeah. And I believe you started out as a barber, right?
I never heard that.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that. No.
Yeah, he was a barber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you know, I mean, hey, if you're going to have a barber, he'd be one. He could sit there and tell you some stories, you know.
Well, that'd be great. he'd make a terrific barber. You guys are, and I'm hoping it happens, you guys are scheduled again for Ruth Eckerd July 23rd of this year.
Yeah.
And that you guys,
that happened, you know,
yeah, I know.
You know, we have some dates earlier than that, but I just don't know with the COVID going on here if those are going to happen or not, you know. So we basically have some dates in March, you know, but I don't think they're going to happen, you know, the way things are going right now, you know, but we'll see, you know.
Well, that show has you, Poco, and Pure Parody. That's a great lineup.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, we played with Poco, of course. You know, Rusty kind of took a little sabbatical and wasn't playing for a while. So, but you know, over the last few years, we toured with Poco a lot. And of course, I'm spacing out the other band you mentioned, Poco and who?
Pure Prairie League.
Oh, Pure Prairie League. Oh yeah. We play with those guys all the time. You know.
Oh yeah.
So. It's a good lineup. I mean, it's all compatible music, and you know, we're all good friends, and we get along, and love being together out on the road. I really, you know, I haven't played a gig since the end of February last year, so I'm jonesing to get back out on the road and get back out there with my friends, and being feel so lucky to do what I do and be able to play for the people. You know, I really miss that. You know, so.
Well, we miss you guys, man. I mean, without music, we're all lost.
Yeah, music does play a big part in our life, you know.
It does.
So, and, you know, I appreciate that, you know. I mean, I've had a wonderful career, you know, thanks to my buddy Rick Roberts, who started Firefall, you know, along with Josh, you know. But I probably wouldn't have been in the band if it hadn't been for Ricky, you know, so.
Yeah, you know, I had Rick on the show. He's a great guy. I've had Jock on the show, and I've had Mark on the show. I mean, all you guys are, you know, A1 with me, man. You guys are great.
All right. Well, I'm glad I can finally get to talk with you then, so complete the circle here. You know?
There you go. Did you attend his... Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, our dear friend Mr. Michael Clark is no longer with us.
I know.
I sadly don't get to speak with you, but I can tell you about Michael. He was a one-of-a-kind guy, you know, and I really miss him dearly. Even though I grew up with Ricky, you know, and we're dear friends, you know, I probably hung out with Michael more than anybody else in the old days on the road. You know, we used to play tennis and stuff. And,
right.
You know, when he'd get out of hand, I'd go, Michael, you know, go somewhere else, you know. So, he always respected that, and we always got along, you know.
Do you still talk to Rick once in a while?
Oh, I talk to him all the time. Yeah. He's doing good. You know,
good.
I mean, he's had several books out, and he was out last year, I think. And the year before him and Larry were out doing a duo thing, you know, for a while. But I don't know if they're still doing that or not. And now, of course, with the way gigs are these days, I know they haven't been doing it lately. But I don't know if they have plans to continue on or not, you know. But, you know, that was kind of a good thing. Don Chapman, along with them, and they did a little trio thing. And they would go out and play their Fireball songs, you know. So it's good, you know. I mean, going back to the band, you know, I mean, everything, even though we have three original guys in the band, you know, Jock and Mark and myself, we were kind of the, you know, the music and the meat behind it. But, you know, Ricky's songwriting and vocals and Larry's songwriting and vocals, I mean, we all had a part to play. That's the way I explain it. You know, it's kind of like the spokes in a wheel, you know. We all fit in and everybody brought something to the table and it turned pretty good, you know.
Well, you got some great, talented musicians in the band. I mean, you know, you can't go wrong. You guys are so tight. You know, the band is so tight. And every time you're on the bill with all these other guys, you know, like when I saw you, you always blow everybody away, in my opinion.
Well, hey, I appreciate that. You certainly do. We're just very lucky and fortunate to have the fans that we do that still come out and support us and, you know, keep us working. You know, it's a good thing because I could never hold down a day job, you know, so I'm very thankful for the fans, you know, for keeping me working.
You know, that ovation you got after your flutes solo was incredible, man, at Ruth Eckerd. I mean...
Yeah, we pretty much get that every night. I mean, because it's, I think, you know, more than anything else, it's just something that you know, people come out to rock shows, they just, they don't, I mean, unless you sing Jethro Tull or somebody, you don't see a lot of flute, you know, I mean, right. You know, actually, I don't know if you know or not, I played, after Jerry retired from Marshall Tucker, I played with Marshall Tucker band for 10 years, and Jerry, the reason I got that job was that we played together a lot in the old days, and matter of fact, we opened up Madison Square Garden, you know, with a headliner show with Marshall Tucker and Firefall, but, you know, Jerry and I pretty much did the same thing, played keyboards and horns and sax and flute, you know, so it was a pretty easy transition for me in between Firefall to go do that for a while, you know, so.
Yeah, that Marshall Tucker must have been a fun gig.
Yeah, it was fun, you know, it was different. I mean, I think I'm lucky my wife didn't divorce me. I think the first year I joined them, we were on the road like 230 days out of the year, you know, so it was like, you know, a little more than I expected, you know, but, you know, it was all good, you know. They're a bunch of good fellas, and, you know, sadly to say, it's like most rock bands, there weren't many original members in the band. Yeah. Doug was still in the band, but it was basically Doug and Jerry, and then Jerry decided to quit, and so I got the job, so. But it's like, you know, I mean, it's like a lot of bands, like Little River Band. I'm not, I don't even know if there's any original members in Little River Band, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, you know, people would come up sometimes and, you know, complain. It's like, you know, you guys aren't Marshall Tucker, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, where's Troy? You know, where's Tommy? You know, and I go, well, they're dead, you know. So, you know, you're going to have to go to heaven if you want to hear the original lineup again. This is Marshall Tucker, you know. You know, 2000 or, you know, 1999 or, you know, whatever you want to call it, but it is what it is. And that's the situation with a lot of, you know, more classic rock bands. You know, they don't have all the original members. That's totally the part, you know, I mean, because it does change the sound up a little bit. You know, it's just like Firefall. I mean, you know, I really, as much as I respect Jerry's voice and everything, I really miss Ricky's voice and Larry's voice and stuff, you know, but we are what we are, you know, with Firefall, you know, 2020 and 21, and, you know, we're still heading down the road.
You know, it's funny, you know, I've lived here now for about 18 years in Florida, but I came from D.C., and I used to listen to Larry on classic rock radio.
Well, you know, Larry used to, you know, one of our managers was Jack Boyle. He used to own Solar Doors.
That's right, and, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's where Larry actually got, you know, he played at the Solar Doors a couple times. And I think Ricky, the Reek, where he got in the band was Ricky met Larry. He got a cab, and Larry was a cab driver at the time, and I think he took Ricky to the airport. They got to talking and stayed in communications, and, you know, I think Larry got Rick some songs and stuff. So when they were forming the band, you know, he goes, Ricky told the rest of the guys, I know this guy in D.C., we need to get him out here. And they played, Ricky played Cinderella for him, and they said, all right, get him out here.
Oh, I love Cellar Door concerts, man. You know how many concerts I've seen under that umbrella, Cellar Door, especially at the cabin?
Quite a few. I mean, Jack Boyle was a kind of one of a kind. I really like Jack a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Shooter, you know what I mean? You don't want to mess with him. You didn't want to be on his bad side, but you know, he was always a great shooter, and I appreciate that. You know, because a lot of times there's so much bullcrap going on in the industry. You know, when someone's just straight up with you, you really appreciate it. You know?
Right. So. Exactly. Before I get into the new album, I want to talk about a lost gem. Okay, Forgotten Journey.
Oh, okay.
I gave that 5 stars, man. I love that album. You know, I do like jazz. I love smooth jazz, and you are so freaking talented on that album. It's you and what, Ron Reinhart also?
Ron Reinhart, Dave Reinhart, and Tim George, who are pretty much staples around the, you know, this area here. I mean, Ron plays with Dave Cog and all kinds of people. And, you know, Dave used to play, I was in Richard Elliott's band, and so was Ron. And so, and Tim is, he's a school teacher, but he's one of the best bass players I've ever played with, you know. So you're exactly right. We have a lot of talented musicians around here, you know.
you've got a couple of tunes that kind of had a little bit of a Latin flair that you could have used Joe on. Did you hear me?
Yeah. Actually, Joe did play on one track.
Did he really?
But not on Forgotten Journey. It was on the CD that I put out before that, which was called Firefall Revisited. And what I did with that was take a bunch of our hits and redid them groove-wise a little bit. And rather than being, you know, vocally and lyrically there, I just basically did them instrumentally and, you know, kind of put a little smooth jazz feel to it, you know. And actually, the one song on there that wasn't a Firefall song was a song I wrote called Nestor, and Joe played on that track before he died, you know, because I'd started it quite a few years, you know, so.
Well, you got a track called Que Sabor, which means what flavor, and that had the Latin flair to it. You had a couple of tunes that kind of sounded Latin. Yeah.
Well, I love Latin music.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's always appealed to me, and one of my favorite flute players, especially in the jazz world, is Nestor Torres, you know, and I really appreciate his playing and stuff, and actually when I wrote that song, Nestor, that's who I wrote for, you know. He was my inspiration, you know.
I love the album, man, and you were talking about Ron Reinhardt. Ron's done work with, I think, Rick Derringer, Jeff Berlin, which I think Jeff was from Tampa as well, in that area.
Yeah,
yeah. Good, great bass player. And the tracks you have, you did Unchain My Heart, the Ray Charles tune, written by Bobby Sharp.
Yeah, you know, and I'll give you a little heads up on that, you know. In the front of that song is like, you know, you hear this little voice going, "Don't do me like that."
Right.
Well, that is Ray Charles.
Really?
That come off of a CD that a friend gave me. It's not a CD out. It's just like when Ray Charles came into the studio with Ahmet Erdogan, and this was before they signed him, they were going through songs and stuff, and anyway, they did that song, and he just happened at one point in there to go, "Don't do me like that," you know, and I go, "I gotta use that."
Oh, it's awesome. Love it.
Yeah. So, I mean, a little history there. Put Ray Charles on my CD, even if he just says, "Don't do me like that," you know.
And you got, Love Will Find a Way. You got some girl singers in the background, right?
Yeah, you know, that's a couple of local girls from Tampa here. You know, Alanya, I forget the names, I'm not really that good friends with them, I took the lead of my engineer and go, "Man, I need some background vocals on this, who can I use?" And he turned me on to these girls, and they did great job, you know, so.
They're excellent. They're really, really good.
Yeah.
And,
go
ahead.
That was the whole thing I wanted to have, you know, like even with the Firefall Revisited, I have some friends of mine, Pam Rose from Nashville and another fella, I forget his name, but he was from Australia, big name in Australia, but they did the background vocals on that, you know, and actually Pam had sang on one of my songs that I had on Cloud Crop and Sun Dreamers, you know, she helped with background vocals, so. Made a lot of sense to use them on that. Actually, on that album too, I've got Josh playing on it a little bit, and Ricky actually singing just the hook on "Just Remember I Love," or no, "Goodbye I Love You." I'm sorry, not "Just Remember," but
right.
"Goodbye." So
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, the tune, "Your Sweet Love." Is that a mixture of, doesn't that have an Anita Baker in it as well, or is that a...
No, that song I wrote, you know, "Sweet Love,"
right.
It sounds like her big hit, but it's not her hit at all, it's an original song, it sounded so much like that, I go, you know, I'll call it "Sweet Love," you know, so it's not, so, but no, it's not Anita Baker, and it's not her song, you know, so...
Very R&B influenced, though, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it sounded, you know, I mean, when the song was written, you go, you know, it sound like Anita Baker, you know.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, it made sense, you know. So.
And you got funky with Twilight Delight.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I didn't know what to do with that track. It's just a party track.
Right.
It starts out, you know, it's just a funky grooving kind of thing, and it, you know, that's it's kind of funny about the name. I was trying to figure out what to name the song, and we were sitting in the studio with George Harris, who has a studio here. Sitting in the studio with him and trying to figure out what to call that, and he had we were eating some chocolate, and the chocolate, and the name of the chocolate was Twilight Delight. And I go, that's it.
That's funny.
So anyway, I appreciate you talking about these CDs, because I've had them out for a couple of years. They're on my website, and you know, on YouTube, I have a site on YouTube, Dave News, and a TV channel and stuff. So anybody wants to check them out, they can check them out there. But I guess we're supposed to be talking about
Firefall. Well, I was so impressed by the album, I had to mention it, because I really love it.
I really appreciate that, and thank you for bringing it up, because I was proud of it, too. I thought it turned out pretty good.
Excellent. I hope you do more of that, too.
Oh, I will. I've got a couple of projects in the works here.
Uh-huh.
All the downtime that we had this year, I've actually started working on another CD, and I actually have two CDs in the works. One's going to be a little more rocky, and then one's New Age CD that I started probably 12 years ago.
Wow.
And it's been 95% complete, but I just never finished it, you know? So I figured, well, hey, could be a good time to finish it off, you know? Because, like we were talking about earlier, I have some friends like Michael Emmett, who was co-writer on Ghost Town on the Comet CD.
Right.
With Tony J. White.
Yep.
And, you know, he's on the CD, and I go, well, he's no longer with us, but I'm going, I need to honor him and get this thing done and put it out, you know. So.
Well, you know, Ghost Town and There She Is, I mean, if radio was normal like it used to be, those two, I think, would have been hits, you know?
Well, I think I brought in Ghost Town because, I thought, out of all the songs we were doing, you know, or had started at that point, I was thinking, well, you know, this one really lends itself to the Firefall sound. You know, this could be, you know,
yeah,
kind of like the old. And, you know, on Comet, we've progressed, and it's a new band because we have new members, you know, mm-hmm. even with Sandy being there on drums, even though he's been there for 40 years or whatever, I mean, he's not the original, not Michael Clark, you know, but anyway, I forgot the point I was going to make.
I do that, too. Well, you're talking about Michael Clark.
That song, oh, I know what I was going to say. It's like the CD was hard to make because, like you mentioned earlier, you know, mm-hmm. we all live in five different states, and, you know, so it's not like the old days where we get together to rehearse the hall and we rehearse
right.
2 weeks and come up with the songs and then, you know, bring in a producer and he'd work with us a little bit. And next thing, we're in the studio cutting the album and it'd be all done. You know, this time took quite a few years to put this together because whenever at the same place, same time, you know, if we were out on the road playing and then nobody wanted to hang out after we've been out on the road for a few days, you know, they want to get home, you know, so. So it's, and I have to give Jock credit, you know, for pushing this thing through because, you know, he, it was really, you know, his persistence, I think, that really helped us finish this thing, and it was very important for us, you know, because with not being able to be on the road touring, you know, we had to try to figure out somewhere to stay in touch with the band and go, well, let's finish this thing up. And so we did, you know.
Well, how did you prepare for this with everybody in different towns? How do you practice, you know, for
there wasn't any practice. We just kind of get together at the studio together and put it together from there, you know, and then when we work together, I mean, I have a studio at my house, and it's pretty much everybody had a studio, and Gary had access. He was in Nashville, so he had access to whatever studio he wanted to use. So I did a lot of the overdubs in my studio.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did where I did my jazz CD. Jock came down one time, and I put some D3 on Soap Town and a couple other songs, and used the studio here. But everybody was basically doing things. I mean, there was a couple places before we all got together. We got together in Nashville at this one studio there, and we basically cut a few couple basic tracks, and some of them made it, and some of them didn't.
Sure. So. Well, you got a nostalgia track on there called Way Back When, which is great. I mean, it mentions all the great 60s bands, you know?
Yeah, that's, I know Josh's written a lot of songs, but I give Josh a compliment. I mean, because Ricky was such a great lyricist and stuff, and a lot of songs that Josh has written, he's done a great job, but, I felt that on Way Back When was the best lyrics he's written, because it was very, current for the time and, just very relevant, so.
Well, I'm glad you stuck Nature's Way in there as well. I knew that was coming.
Well, yeah, that's been a great song. I mean, I've known that song for years before I was even in Firefall. It's kind of weird, because I go back, speaking about Florida, I saw Way Back When, before I'd even moved to Atlanta or anywhere else I was living here, they had a pop festival down here. It was the Palm Pop Festival. I forget what it's called it. But Spirit was on that bill.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing Spirit play, and, Mark was in the band, and I had no idea that years later I would be in the same band with, this guy, It's like, that was quite the festival. It was the Rolling Stones were the headliner, but
wow.
They didn't come on until like 4 o'clock in the morning. And by that time, me and my buddy, who had been, let's say, partaking of things we probably should have been partaking of, started to get a little high and then realized we had chiggers, So it was not a good idea to be tripping and having chiggers,
That's funny. I went to broadcasting school in Fort Lauderdale. That's when I first came down. That was a long time ago, but I saw you guys at the Sportatorium, the Hollywood Sportatorium?
Oh, yeah.
You guys,
yeah.
Yeah, you guys opened for Heart. I remember that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that. We did a show there. I think that was the show where we rented a bunch of palm trees and stuff and brought them in.
Right.
I think that, I don't know. I remember which, time starts to fade on me here. I mean, so many years have gone by so fast, I just kind of hard to keep track of it all, So, but I feel so fortunate, to be able to do what I do. And I throw my respect out to all the talented musicians that are out there, because I know a lot of them that deserve to have the opportunities that I've had. And they just don't ever get them, like my friend Michael Emick. I mean,
right.
he wrote with everybody in Nashville, but that song Ghost Town was actually first put out by Meatloaf, and then Michael used to write for Lita Ford. I think he did like two CDs where he wrote almost every song on our album, it's just an honor to be able to, throw a little voodoo out there to all the musician friends that are great, still playing, and just never get out of the bar scene, which is, it's
right.
That's a hard one.
It is hard.
But it's better than not playing at all.
Exactly. Well, every great musician, every guy I talk to, says the only way you're going to even, have a half a chance of making it is you got to get out there and you got to perform, whatever it takes, small clubs, whatever it is, and they can't do that now.
No, you can't do that now, and people ask me, it's like, I'm out on the road, it's like, well, how do you get started in the music business? And I go, well, there's no sure way, you got to be in the right place at the right time and have a certain amount of chops, and then you got a chance,
Right.
You get that one chance to move up to a different level, and you gotta step up to play, perform, sort of like sports, So, if you're on the team and you don't do too good, you get sit on the bench, you know. So
exactly, yeah. You know, I hear mixed reviews about, you know, getting exposure today, you know, for bands, you know, cause, oh, I got YouTube and I get this and that. But you don't have the guys, the pioneers, I mean, you know, like Jack Boyle and people like that, yeah. You know?
No, people, I mean, it is a whole different time. I mean, there's people getting careers and, you know, building exposure, especially some of these people online. And, you know, have 50,000, 100,000 followers, all of a sudden, you know, you're getting sponsored by a thing and people making money that way. And it's not the same, though. You know, I mean, it's, I can't explain to you. I went from playing in underground Atlanta at a place called Scarlet O'Hara, just a house band there for years when I lived in Atlanta. And we used to play Doobie Brothers songs. And then I joined Firefall. We did the first album, and then next thing I know, we're out touring with Fleetwood Mac and the Doobie Brothers. And the first time we played with the Doobie Brothers, they had us come up and sing and listen to the music on the encore. And I've been singing that song for years, and I'm going, how cool is this? You know?
I love the Doobies. They're a great band, and they're another American band that has been on the scene for such a long time, and they're not stopping. Oh, just like Firefall, you know?
Yeah, they have some great players in that band, though, and like one of my favorite sax players, Mark Russo, used to play with the Yellow Jackets. He's been playing with them for years now, you know. I remember being out on the road with Marshall Tucker, and we listened, I think it was either in Reno or Las Vegas, somewhere out there, but it was an all-day festival show, and Marshall Tucker played earlier in the day, and then the headliners were the Doobie Brothers, and everybody else went back to the hotel, but I hung out because I wanted to see them because I knew some of the guys. But, you know, they pull up in their limo. They get out of limo, they jump on stage, hand the guitars, 1, 2, 3, 4, they're into the first song. And I'm just watching them, and all of a sudden, the sax player starts playing. I'm going, wait, man, who is that? You know, and I go, oh, holy crap, that's Mark Russo, you know? He was just killing it, you know?
I was hanging out. Anyway, I hung out with them at the Hyatt Regency over here in Sarasota downtown. And we were all at the bar together. I think Mark was there, too. And they were drinking, they're at the bar drinking, like, you know, scotch and all kinds of other things. And me, like an idiot, come up and say, it's all on me. And, you know, the bill was like $500. I didn't realize these guys were, you know, spending this kind of money on expensive liquor, you know, and
Well, you would think that everybody in the AJR, they would have slowed down some by now, but some of them haven't, you know?
Some of them haven't, no.
Yeah, that's the road you got to go down, you know, for yourself, you know?
I ended up in Mike Hossack's, the drummer, Mike, you know, in his hotel room, and it was me and two other guys, and the rest of the night we were looking at on the computer for who had the most beef cattle in the United States. Yeah. That's what, you know, there was no parties, no girls, just a computer and looking up information.
Yeah, well, hey, welcome to the new age, you know?
Exactly.
Oh, Lordy.
That's funny.
I hope everybody appreciates the new comic CD.
It's awesome.
I appreciate it. Getting it done. It's a little departure from the old album, but it's got really good songs, and we are who we are, and you know, we hope the fans appreciate it because we had fun making it, you know. So.
Well, I gave that 5 stars as well because I really enjoyed the album, and like I said, there's two or three tracks on there could have been hits, you know, on a top 40 radio, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a whole different thing, you know.
Yeah.
It's sort of like when we were in the old days. I mean, we were in the heyday of our day, and all of a sudden, you know, we'd had 2 or 3 albums out, you know, that were really doing really well for us, and we were heading in the right direction, and all of a sudden disco came out.
I know.
And it's like, uh-oh, where do we fit in here?
Yeah.
You know, so we did, you know.
The only ones that fit in were the Bee Gees. They're the only ones that made a splash in disco that were, you know, top
well,
guys.
And they were well deserved. I mean, actually, Josh played on one of the Bee Gees on one track. You know, he said, you know, but they were down in Criteria, you know, doing stuff while we were down there a couple times, you know, and so, you know, Josh got to fit in and they asked him to come in and play on the track and he did. And so he set his platinum, you know, Bee Gees album on his wall for playing on one song. Hey, it works.
Yeah, exactly. Who do you think is the, two questions, who's the best flute player of all time, and who's the best sax player of all time?
Oh, God, that's a hard one. I don't know all of the flute players. I'm sure there's lots of people out there that I'm missing and never been able to hear. You know, but I can tell you from my standpoint of view, my favorite flute players is the toss-up is between Herbie Mann and Nestor Dorr.
Herbie
Mann, you know, he had like a lot of Latin influence on some of his live shows and stuff too, so that might be where I get that niche to play the, I mean, the flute really fits into Latin music anyway.
It does.
So, I mean, that's just the way that is. I mean, as well as the other things. Of course, you know, when I was younger, you know, listening to Jethro Tull, you know.
Sure.
And, I mean, Jethro's a crazy man, you know, so, but, you know, I hope I got to plan on some new CDs, and Glenn Fico, our manager, you know, he used to manage, Jethro, or Ian Anderson, I should call him Jethro, he gets pissed off. But he used to handle Ian Anderson, and, I was thinking that wouldn't it be great, you know, if I could do a dual track with Ian Anderson, you know, on flute, you know, so, I'm going to try to put that together and see if maybe that's a possibility in the future, you know, so, because I'd love to do that. That'd be on my bucket list to be able to sit in the studio and play with Ian Anderson, you know, so.
Well, you got the connection, Ann Layton.
Oh, yeah.
She's her publicist, the American publicist for Ian, you know?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
No,
there you go.
Told me she's been involved, you know, between her and Lynn, you know, I mean, I'm going, well, hey, you know, maybe we can make that happen, you know, Jethro's up for it. You know, I mean, Ian, I keep calling him Jethro, I remember having it. But you know how that is. I mean, it's just the association people.
Yep.
You know.
Well, everybody thinks he's Jethro Tull, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what?
He is. Even though he is Ian Anderson, he is Jethro Tull.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. I've gotten to interview him a couple of times, and I just had Martin Barr on the show recently.
Cool.
Yeah. But you know what? I'm gonna email, when we get off the phone, I'm going to email Ann and tell her, you know, because he's doing a lot of collaborations now.
Yeah, I mentioned it to her.
Did you?
When we first spoke, and I think she said something about it, but... I'm just coughing a little bit here.
You know, you guys can have a flute off.
We could do dueling flutes. You know?
Dueling flutes. That'd be cool. I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, you know, and I actually, Gary, our lead singer, he's for himself, he's doing a working on a bluegrass album in Nashville. And I told him, well, hey, you need to get me on one of those tracks because, you know, this would be a very, you know, unusual thing, you know, bluegrass flute, you know?
That's right.
you don't hear that every day.
No, you don't. And it's time to be different.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we'll see what happens. You know, like I say, I'm just, I feel very fortunate that Fireball has this new CD. Hopefully we can get that playing by the beginning of summer, not the middle of summer, not before, and hopefully things will get back to normal, you know, so.
I hope so.
I hope so. Been a very unusual year, been a very trying year.
Yep.
A year of introspection, and I just feel sorry for all the people that died, you know, from this pandemic, and it's just ridiculous, you know, so.
I've got
what it is also.
I know. I've got an aunt that passed away from it, And I have an uncle that's in the hospital with it. And I've known so many people that caught it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to make any, you know, judgments or whatever, but, you know, a lot of people are still out there not social distancing and wearing masks and gathering in large, you know, things. I mean, you're fine if you want to think that way, but you also, you know, got to realize, you know, it's like going to Vegas, you're gambling.
Exactly.
You know? And you're not necessarily going to win. The odds are against you, you know. So.
Well, the thing is, you don't know how it's going to affect you. You know, some people it doesn't, you know.
Yeah, my brother got it and his family, and they just didn't seem to have any problem with it. And then other people, you know, they end up dying from it. So you just don't know it's a hit and miss thing. But, you know, if I could say it's like gambling. You know, you want to gamble, that's up to you. But the bad thing about that is if you gamble and you get it, and if you don't have any symptoms or you don't feel like you're having any symptoms, you know, you can be out there giving it to somebody that it may affect totally different, you know. And that's the whole thing. That's the tragic part of it, you know. So, I mean, you know, especially older people, which I have to consider myself an older person now because, you know.
Yeah, me too.
I wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and go, "What the hell is that?"
I know, you know, inside our minds, we feel like we're still in high school, right? But
I'm ready to get back out on the football field.
Exactly. But our bodies say differently. Did you play football in high school?
Hell yeah, I was the captain of the JV team.
Really?
I love playing football. And then I also got in a rock band, and you know, we'd go away on the weekends to, you know, play our music, chase women around, and come home with $35 in your pocket. I'm going, you know, I mean, as much as I love to play football, I knew I was never big enough or fast enough, because I played offense and defense. I was linebacker on defense and fullback on offense.
Oh, wow.
I had the attitude, but I didn't have the speed and the size.
Yeah.
So it's like a good decision on my part.
Yeah, I played baseball, and I got hurt a lot. So I had a chance to get on a team in high school, and I decided to grow my hair out instead and listen to rock and roll.
Yeah, well, we weren't allowed to do that in our day. We had to, you know, they used to give a shit for growing our hair long when I was going to school.
Really?
You know. Anyway, going back to baseball, here's a little story. You know, I used to play Little League baseball, and I always played outfield or played, you know, shortstop. And then the coach got this big idea that I could be a pitcher. And all I had was a fastball. And the first game I pitched a no-hitter.
Wow.
I also hit 13, and we still lost the game. I walked, I don't know how many I walked, but I hit 13, and we lost the game, you know. So by the end of the game, people were afraid to come up to the bat. They were seeing them with a ball, you know. So, so my pitching career didn't last very long, you know. So.
Wow, that's history there. You hit 13, and you lost the game, and you got a no-hitter.
Got a no-hitter. Yeah, I have the newspaper article somewhere that shows, you know, big news, pitches, no-hitter, lost 13. Down it says the score, and we lost the game, you know. So.
That's crazy. Oh, man. I had a pitching debut, too, because I had a really good arm in the outfield. And they scored 9 runs on me in like 2 innings, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, well, that's sort of where I was. That's why I played outfield. I could play center field and pretty much get the ball off the plate. I had to throw it one throw, you know. So
So
I guess that's why the coach figured I should be a pitcher. But and I did have a pretty good fastball. I just didn't have any control.
You know, in Little League, we were afraid of you guys.
Well, hell, I'd have been afraid of me. You know, 10, 11 guys get hit before me. If I'd have come up to bat, I'd have gone, oh, no.
Exactly.
You know, anyway.
It's like facing Randy Johnson.
Anyway, we got off the subject again of this comment, you know, so I know I'm supposed to be doing, you know, helping out with trying to get some people to buy this CD, and so.
Well, I'm gonna promote the hell out of it. I've got like 5 different sites. You know, this will be on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify. So I'm gonna get the word out. Yeah.
Good.
Here.
It's nice to talk to history and stories with you, you know, but I just want to make sure I don't get no grief at the end of the day for, you know, not concentrating on the CD.
Well, Comet, the new album is 5 stars all the way. It's a great album. It's a very nice mix of tracks, you know, and and the one that really stands out to me is Ghost Town, because it does
I love that song too. That's why I brought it in, you know. I mean, Michael Image, you know, I can't say, I mean, it's not, you know, a lot of, everybody knows Tony Joe White, but also, too, I wanted to say, you know, bringing that up, that Michael's name was misspelled on the credits for the CD. It was written by Michael Image, spelled E-H-M-I-G, which they didn't spell it that way on the CD, and Tony Joe White, you know, so basically, I just wanted to pick that out there so that if anybody hears that, they'll know that it's Michael Emick, you know.
Right.
Because he has a lot of fans here in the Pine Ellis County. And I mean, he used to be, he's a guy that would go out to a club, he'd play by himself and just mesmerize people. And he would sit there all night and he'd play and never take a break, you know. And I used to get on to him. I go, man, you know, you're giving the rest of us a bad name, man. I got a small bladder. I got to go to the bathroom every 45 minutes, man. I can't sit up here for 4 hours. You
know? Man, talk about dedication, huh?
Yeah. He was a great guy, though. I miss him. Very much.
Like, you know, I had Tony Joe on the show before he passed away. Yeah, he's a great guy. We talked about Elvis. Elvis Presley always thought he was like his twin. They looked a lot alike too. And
I never knew Tony DeWitt. I mean, I knew some of his songs, you know, that he written, but you know, never really knew him. But you know,
he tried to teach Elvis some guitar licks, but he was stubborn. Elvis didn't want, you know, Elvis only played a little, you know, a few chords and that was it. But he didn't want to learn. Didn't want to learn.
Well, hey, you know, he couldn't play guitar and make his moves, so he made it on stage, you know.
That's true.
It wouldn't hurt to write a song or two, you know, but whatever. You know, he didn't need any of that. He was the king.
King. He was. We all miss him too, you know.
Anyway.
David, here's your final question. All right. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Oh my God.
I get that reaction.
There's so many people, you know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I you know, I don't even have a list, you know, because my psyche on the whole thing, I never had any ideas of becoming a, you know, rock and roll, successful rock and roll musician, you know. I just didn't want to work a day job, you know. And some of the positions I found myself in, we played at Carnegie Hall, and I remember being with Roy Buchanan, and I remember being backstage or in the hallway there and seeing all these classical musicians, you know, that played there and just felt so unworthy. You know, and I still feel that way today. I mean, I'm very fortunate, very lucky, and I have a certain amount of talent, but as far as the top-notch people in the world musically, there's so many. I mean, one of my favorite classical composers would have been Debussy, so I would have loved to have maybe collaborated with him on something, you know? And as far as the popular world, hey, I mean, who wouldn't want to play with the Beatles, you know? So, I don't know, and it's, instrumental, it's like I said before, Nestor Torres or would have been, you know, somebody, and, you know, like we talked about before, you know, Ian Anderson, I mean, I'd love to be able to do that, you know, but I'm happy, you know, just being able to do what I've done and the people I have played with. I feel so fortunate, I just never thought about, well, I'd like to do this, I can do that, except for the Ian Anderson thing.
Right.
But anyway, that my answer to that question.
Well, so we got to make the Ian Anderson thing happen. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I would love that. I mean, I would be so honored, you know, and humbled to be able to do that. Because, you know, he was an inspiration, you know, in the old days when I was just, you know, playing horns and stuff, you know, because I used to play flute a lot. But, I mean, I've always gravitated towards the flute anyway, you know, so.
Yeah.
I guess because it's so small, you know, you can almost put it in your pocket. You don't have this big thing to lug around, you know. So.
you know, I played flute in elementary school, and I couldn't hack it. I kept getting head rushes. I kept getting head rushes, you know. I got dizzy from...
Well, that starts, you know, people, that happens very consistently. People shut up because you're blowing too much air across it. You're losing too much air. It doesn't take that much air to really play it. You know, it's not like a saxophone, especially like a barisax.
Right.
You know, you got to have some good lungs, you know, to play a barisax. But flute, you know, you can pretty much whisper into, which I do a lot, you know. I whisper and flutter, you know, and that gets me by, so...
I don't know how you do it, man, especially the solo, you know, because that's a long solo you do, you know?
Oh, well, that's what I love to do, and I love, you know, when you get those spots to stretch out a little bit, you know, you just like to do that, because I just like to play, you know, so, I mean, and a lot of times, you know, when you have a set that's constricted to 45 minutes, or if we're headlining, you know, 90 minutes, you know, you get a few spots where you can stretch out, but, you know, but I have to say, when I play with Marshall Tucker, I mean, you could have a guitar solo go on there for 20 minutes.
Well, at least you got the song Can't You See, which has got a lot of flute in it.
we used to do that a little different, but I mean, you know, there was a song called Midnight Promises that we used to do all the time. It was written by Toy, and the guitar solos would just go on, and it's basically three chords, you know, so you sit there for 20 minutes playing three chords, and you go, where the hell is this guitar solo going to end, you know? I mean, you hate to be in that way, but it's like, sometimes that's what happens, you know, you just go on and on and on. How much more are you going to say of the same thing, you know, so...
Well, what's a good thing about Firefall? I mean, you play flute, you play sax, and you play keyboards. So you got your pick.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm a little bit of harmonica. You know, I've made a career out of being a harmonica player, knowing only about 5 weeks. I don't really consider myself
right.
you know, serious harp player. But I've gotten on a lot of tracks on a lot of albums. And, you know, I just take what I do and make it fit in, and, you know, that's what it's all about. I mean, when it comes to recording the songs, it's finding the things that fit with the song and,
right.
you know, add to it, bring it flavor-wise. I mean, that's kind of what I did. I mean, my part in the band was basically taking it out of the total guitar realm and, you know, adding a little icing on the top of the cake, you know, with different colors and different things, synthesizer sounds, and, you know, even on Cinderella, the harmonica, I mean, they had no idea. I remember when we cut that track, you know, I said, well, you know, I'll play a little harmonica, let's see if maybe you guys like this. And went in and did a couple of things. I said, yeah, it works. You know, it's put down, you know, so that's how that happened.
Yeah, I was talking to Jock. I think it was Jock. It was either Jock or Mark talking about Cinderella, how that almost got banned on the radio or something like that.
Yeah, for the lyrics, the Bible Belt South, because
right.
the lyrics, goddamn girl, I understand that. I mean, these days and times, that ain't nothing, you know?
I know.
Back then, you know, I mean, I wish it was a little, I mean, I'm not for censorship, but, you know, there's a few things that maybe I don't really want to see of you.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. That's so mild compared to what the rap stars say.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was the same thing back in the day. I mean, you know, look, when the Beatles started out, and I had that band, the Beatles albums, and they burned all the albums. And
right.
Yeah,
I know.
It's like, what's offensive about this? You know, they're talking about love, you know?
Yeah. Well, I tell you what was very offensive that the Beatles did, and I'm glad they got rid of it, was that Butcher album, you know, the babies.
Yeah. Cover on that, yeah.
That was horrible, man.
I'm glad somebody talked them out of that.
Exactly. I don't know what they were thinking there.
I don't know. It must have been a bad trip or something.
It had to be. It had to be. Dave, thank you so much, man, for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me and the opportunity to talk about our new album. And
it's a great album.
It's been very pleasurable. Thank you.
Great album, and I love your solo album as well. And I'm telling you, man, that really stuck out. And I love you doing jazz. It's incredible.
Oh, well, hey, I love doing it too. You know, that's a hard world to break into. You know, I mean, I got quite a bit of airplay on that, but I never broke into Cashbox or any of that stuff. You know, and I didn't even get on Sirius Radio, which was a little disappointing.
Yeah.
You know, but I got a lot of airplay all over the world, really. You know, so which is good.
Well, it's a shame that you know, the jazz genre, man, it's just not what it used to be. You know, it's a shame.
I mean, I understand. I mean, it's just smooth jazz. I mean, I never really considered calling the CD a jazz CD because it's more of an instrumental thing.
Right, right.
Jazz CD. Basically, what smooth jazz is, it's
right.
instrumental music, you know. So it's not, you know, straight ahead jazz or bebop or anything like that, you know. So that's a whole different world.
Yes, it is.
I don't think I get to function in that world, you know.
Right. So, well, Dave, thank you again, man. The album's awesome, and hopefully you'll be on tour again very soon. I hope you make that gig in Clearwater. I hope that happens.
Well, I hope so, too. That'd be an easy one for me, because I'd come home and sleep in my own bed, which is...
if when all this goes away, maybe we can, have a coffee or a bite to eat or something in Clearwater. I'll meet you up there.
Yeah, anytime in this area, give me a call, man, you know, and we'll get together, you know, once we get back to that point, you know.
That'd be great.
Oh, I'd love that. Just the first time I met you, but you seem like a really nice guy, and I appreciate that. I appreciate everything you've done to do to help us out with this new CD, and let's go have some coffee for this game, you know. So.
Yep, the fact will let you.
Yeah, hey, you know, I'm just a southern boy. I mean, my Spanish is nowhere.
Yeah, but you hung around Ybor, I'm sure.
anyway, but you know, I've had my exposure though. You know, I used to play with a band called the Deep Rivers Band. I had a guy named Kenny Suarez and Danny Yannis.
Right.
You know, on bass. You know, and we used to play at the Columbia Restaurant and the house band there for a while.
Really?
Which was
huh.
Oh yeah, that was a experience in itself, you know. Because the old man, when he was still alive, the guy that old, you know, Columbia, you know, he would never let you have any drinks on stage. You couldn't have water, you couldn't have anything.
Oh gosh.
It was a pet peeve of his, you know, and I said, what the hell is this? You know. So, but anyway, enough of that, you know. So.
Well, I'm surprised you didn't learn a little Spanish from Joe.
Yeah, I was laughing too much to learn it. You
know? Yeah, I miss him. He was a funny guy. He was.
He was.
Yeah.
Anyway, I appreciate your time. And,
all right, Joe.
You know, when things get back to normal, give me a call. You got my number now.
I do.
You and Denver up this way, and, you know, we'll get together. I'd love to do that.
So. All right, Dave. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
You have a great day. I appreciate it.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye. Purchase the latest release by Firefall entitled Comet. 5 stars all the way. It's a great album. First album for Firefall in, 25 years. Formed by the former members of the Birds, Flying Burrito Brothers, Spirit, and Zephyr. Firefall's commercial success includes 3 gold albums, 2 platinum albums, and 11 chart-topping singles. The band's biggest hit, You Are the Woman, has been played on commercial radio more than 8 million times and has also appeared over 75 films and television shows. For the past 4 decades, Firefall has toured the world and shared stages with other iconic bands such as Fleetwood Mac, The Band, The Beach Boys, Kenny Loggins, Journey, Heart, ELO, And, of course, the Marshall Tucker Band. Currently touring with three original members, Jock Bartley, David Muse, and Mark Andes. Longtime drummer Sandy Fica and talented newcomer Gary Jones. For more information about David Muse and Firefall, visit www.firefall.squarespace.com. They're on Facebook, facebook.com/firefallofficial, instagram.com/firefallofficial, and also David Muse's official website, www.davemuse.com. Very special thanks to the wonderful Ann Layton of Layton Media arranging this interview with David Muse, and of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. And, of course, like always, if you have comments or suggestions for the show, you can always contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. And please, please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews right into your mailbox. It is real news, people. And please buy my new book, which is finally out, entitled The Rockstar Chronicles. This is Series 1, and I hope to have 4 series. Chronicles, Truths, Confessions, and Wisdom from the Music Legends That Set Us All Free. You can order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com and amazon.com. It features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends the world will ever know. It got 5 stars from Literary Titan. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. God bless. Stay healthy and have a great week.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.